Well, beloved, today is our first Sunday of January 2024, and also our first Sunday of this new year. And because it's a new year and the 2023 Nativity series has now become history, we're going to take some stuff on the back burner and we're going to bring it to the front burner. And hopefully I will not burn it. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 16 this morning. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Back in November, we actually concluded, I believe, around verses 12 of Deuteronomy, looking at these different annual feasts in the life of the nation. So this morning, I'm going to read verses 13 to 22, and by the grace of God, finish up and wrap up chapter 16. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. After that, thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine. Now, I want you to see that we're talking about the season of fall. We're looking at the months between around September, October of their calendar at this time. All right? So we're looking at the final harvest for the year, bringing in that final harvest. And part of this seasonal cycle, at this time, they were to take branches, build like a little tent, a little hut, and they were to live in these particular huts or tents made of vegetation for 7 days. And thou shalt rejoice in thy feast. So notice, it was a day of feasting. Thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant, the Levite. Notice, the stranger, that would be a non-Israelitish person. The fatherless, the widow that are within thy gates. So notice, this particular feast was not something that was done privately within a family. But you did have a family. But notice who else was allowed to be part of the family's feasting. Servants, if they had any. The Levitical priests. Remember, the Levites had no territorial land that they could claim. They lived in the suburbs outside the cities. They had patches of ground to build their own or to grow their own food. But the spiritual people who would be their spiritual guides and teachers were also part of this feasting. A stranger, somebody who was not a member of one of the 12 tribes. Okay, a stranger. And then the fatherless and the widow, who had no means, apparently, to celebrate and to be festive. So this was kind of a communal gathering. 7 days shalt thou keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose. Now that would be Jerusalem. Because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase and in all thy works of thy hands. Therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. So notice, this was not a time for a funeral. It wasn't a time to be ho-hum. It was a time to be actively engaged with rejoicing, with festivity, enjoyment. The harvest is in. The growing season is now concluded. And now a time of winter is now approaching. All right? Now, remember, when Moses gives this, it is at the end of the 40-year wandering by the nation. Many of that original generation that left Egypt are dead. Their carcasses have been buried in the wilderness because of their unbelief at Kadesh Barnea when they were told to go into the land. God would go before them. Remember the 12 spies? And you had Joshua and Caleb came back with a favorable report, but they were trumped. They were checkmated by the other 10 spies who exaggerated the walls and the size of the people, and the people became downhearted. And then they get a boost of adrenaline, and they're going to go into the land on their own, and they were whooped up and beat. And then God said, well, for every day that you've been want, it was their 40th day, and he tacked on 1 year for every day. So now they're wandering for 40 years, and they're coming to the end of that wandering, and they're eventually going to go to the north. They're going to have to go through Moab and Ammon, and then this King Og, and the king of Bashan is going to be their adversary, and eventually take them to the west bank of the Jordan, where Moses is going to die, and God's going to bury him on Mount Nebo, and then Joshua takes the reins. Are you with me? Historically, this is Moses rehearsing all of this before his death and before crossing Jordan under Joshua's leadership. So he's telling them what they're going to do when they get into the land. This is what you're going to end up doing on a permanent basis. These seven feasts that will be rotated in a secular fashion from spring to fall. 3 times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose. Now you need to be aware of this stipulation that God places. Because when you come to the four Gospels, you're going to find Jesus obeying this law by being in Jerusalem during certain feasts that came up on their calendar during his ministry. 3 times in the year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose. Now, that's Jerusalem. And when you come to Acts chapters 1 and 2, what do you find? You find Jews from around the Roman Empire moving to Jerusalem because of Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, okay? And you also have the Feast of Pentecost coming, where the population of the city of Jerusalem and the surrounding suburbs would have been bulging with many people from around the Roman Empire who were Jews who would be in obedience to what you see here in verse 16. Here's where you find that. In the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and in the Feast of Weeks, and in the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty or empty-handed. So notice the three feasts. Unleavened Bread, which, if you can remember, so far in our journey here, you have the Passover, right? And then the very next day after Passover is the Feast of Unleavened Bread, a solemn convocation, no work at all. That's why the woman had to do all the preparation to get Jesus' body down from the cross. And they had to get the preparation done for this feast, because no work was to be done. All the work was to be done on that Passover day in anticipation of the feast, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that feast went 7 days. Okay? So, if you're going to be in town for the first day of Unleavened Bread, you're not going to arrive that morning. You're going to be in Jerusalem probably several days or a week in advance. You got to find your lodging. You got to find some place to live for the upcoming feasts. So that would mean that during the Passover, as well as the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the city of Jerusalem would be packed with people in observance, at least the males. What other holiday or feast day? The Feast of Weeks. That would be Pentecost. And the Feast of Tabernacles, which we're now reading about in verse 13. So those are the three annual feasts. Out of all the feasts, these three required every male to be in Jerusalem, and he's not to be empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, verse 17, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. So verses 16 to 17 is something that you need to file in the back of your mind when you're reading the Old Testament, but especially when you read the New Testament, especially in the book of Acts. You're going to find these same feasts referred to, okay, especially in the four Gospels, where Jesus, in obedience, and I'm going to give you an example here pretty soon, where Jesus did go to Jerusalem with his disciples in obedience to 16:17. Read on. Judges and officers shall thou make thee in all thy gates. Now the city gates, beloved, was more than just a very thin wall. When you study and you get a good Bible reference atlas or a handbook, you will find out that the city gates were quite thick. And they had little niches, little rooms where official business could be conducted when you walked into the gate. There may be somebody that would be like someone that certifies a notary of republic, I think. That type of person who would be able to notarize a document back then that would be awfully important, seal it with a certain seal. Well, business would be conducted. Mordecai, for instance, in the book of Esther, he worked in the city gates as a city employer of the king, officiating the king's business. So when you go to the Old Testament and you have a certain story where someone's going into a city and they make a reference to stopping and doing business at the city gate, that's what we're talking about. The city gate was not, you know, a 2-inch piece of plywood with some door attached to it. No, it was very solid, well built, with little niches where business could be conducted of different nature. But when they get to the land, they were to appoint judges and officers that thou shalt make in all thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, throughout thy tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. And so notice that under the law of Moses, it wasn't just simply willy-nilly, every man for himself, everybody becomes a law unto himself, you're going to have chaos. So here God has a stipulation in order to conduct law and order amongst his people. There's going to be a need for judges or some type of an official that's going to be available in the city gate to arbitrate, resolve conflict or controversy for the people. These are the people who did the grunt work for the king, versus the king being nailed every day with every little thing under the sun. Remember Moses' father-in-law? Remember that time when Jethro came to his son-in-law and said, hey, you're burning the candle at both ends. These people are lined up and wrapped around your tent waiting for you to officiate and to give a judgment. Why not take the smaller matters, remember that? And you find men that you can trust, men with character, men with certain qualifications, men who could not be easily bribed, men who are just men, let them arbitrate the little matters, and the real big fires you take care of. Well, that's what this is. Let the king take care of the matters, probably leading to life or death, and let these guys at the lower level take care of the minutia that would come into the city, people trying to resolve an issue. Thou shalt not rest judgment, notice, thou shalt not respect persons. Now, we know that's violated in our day, left and right. Just look at our Supreme Court. Look at our entire judicial system. Our entire judicial system is shot. It's corrupt. Beloved, getting a fair trial today, yes, it is possible if you have enough money and you can bribe the judge or even a jurist. Neither take a gift. What do we call that? Bribery. For a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise. So notice what bribery does. Notice underhanded deals. Notice making a deal under the table. What does it do? It blinds men's eyes and pervert the words of the righteous. You ever wonder how many court cases, how many conclusions at a trial are actually made because of bribery, because the judge or the or a particular jurist has been tainted and has been tainted by maybe the mob or by a gang or by the underworld to throw the jury. That's happened. And a person who had a just grievance or a just cause, his cause or her just plea is overturned and they get no justice because a judge is in the pocket of some bigwig people. Or maybe they have dirt on the judge. Or maybe they got some dirt on one of the jurists. And they've already warned the judge or the jurist, if you vote this way or you decide that way, we're going to expose these pictures of you and your mistress, etc. That which is altogether just shall thou follow. Now, what are we being told here? These judges and these officials in the context of our Deuteronomy 16. The only thing that was just and available for them to use to arbitrate anything was the law of Moses. So they were not to go outside the law of Moses. They were not to go out to the Babylonians or the Persians or the Philistines or the Egyptians to find out how they conducted their judge and jury proceedings. And what do you find in America? We are now, in our own judicial system, versus going on prior precedent in America, we're looking to the world court. We're looking to other courts outside of the United States to see how they deliberated on a particular topic. No. God's people were to use that which was just to follow their deliberations. And the only thing that they had available to them was the law of Moses, not the law of Pharaoh. That thou mayest live and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. So notice the tail end of verse 20. What is God telling them? If you pervert justice, if you go outside the law of Moses, okay, none of your males approach my feast as I've dictated, you're not going to stay in the land too long. Notice how that verse 20 ends. That thou mayest live. We're talking about physical life. We're not talking about being given salvation here. This is not talking about going to heaven and bypassing hell. That thou mayest live, enjoy life, good life, and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Is it possible to lose an inheritance? Yes. Yes. You have a rich grandfather. And he has one beloved grandson. And he wants to bestow all his inheritance on this grandson. And so in the grandfather's will, he makes a stipulation. That upon the 25th birthday of my grandson, provided he's not been in jail, provided he's not gotten in trouble with the law, etc., my inheritance becomes his. Well, one day before hitting 25, he decides to rob a bank. According to grandfather's will, that inheritance is lost and is going to go to the state or somewhere else. You can lose an inheritance. And Israel did lose their land in 721 BC with the Assyrians. And in 606 with the Babylonians, and two successive invasions after that. 70 AD, they were expelled again. 135 AD, they were expelled again due to another rebellion led by someone who claimed to be their Messiah in the year 135 AD. So what God here is telling his ancient covenant people, beloved, they're not even in the land yet. And he's warning them that if you bypass my words and my dictates, you're not going to live and you're not going to stay in the land too long. Thou shalt not plant thee a grove of any trees near unto the altar of the Lord thy God, which thou shalt make thee. Neither shall thou set thee up an image which the Lord thy God hateth. And I believe I've already covered verses 21 and verses 22. verses 21 and 22, excuse me. Well, beloved, it's time to move the book of Deuteronomy from the back burner to the front burner. In this portion of chapter 16, Moses is reiterating, the annual feast of the nation that was to be observed throughout their generations. However, the history of the nation would demonstrate their neglect to even obey these words. Look with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 36, and then we're going to look at 2 Kings 23. What happens when they were expelled from the land? Notice what is said. Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 35. Now, Deuteronomy 16, again, is getting these people, getting their mindsets, getting their minds in gear that you're going to cross over into the land. Moses is going to die. Joshua is going to take up the mantle of responsibility and leadership. And here Moses is God is telling Moses to tell the people this thing about the feast, judges and such, and then about doing certain things about dealing with idolatry, which was actually the straw that broke every camel's back with the nation. Their constant dabbling with idolatry. But 2 Chronicles 35, look at verses 16 to 19. Watch what we read. But they mocked the messengers of God, that's a reference to both major and minor prophets, and despised his words. And again, that was the only thing they had to go by that was just. Second Chronicles 36, verses 16 to 19. But they mocked the messengers of God and despised his words, misused his prophets until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people till, notice, there was no remedy. No amount of animal bloodshed was going to erase this. No amount of fasting and pleading and praying and crying and beating oneself, okay, inflicting torment on the body. No remedy. There was no vaccine, no pill, no prescription, no remedy. Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldeans, who slew their young men with the sword and the house of their sanctuary. So notice, some of the bloodshed was done right in the first temple of Solomon. Had no compassion upon young man or maid. Nebuchadnezzar was no respecter of person. He was an equal opportunity killer. Old men or him that stooped for age, he gave them all into his hand. And all the vessels of the house of God, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king and of the princes, all these he brought to Babylon. Now, note this. Those vessels in verse 18 are the same vessels that Belshazzar will take out of the closet and pour wine and strong drink in Daniel chapter 5 and would toast the gods of gold, silver, stone, and wood. These are the same vessels that he would desecrate in Daniel 5. And they burnt the house of God, break down the wall of Jerusalem, burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the king of Persia. Now notice, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. Besides idolatry, the people violated the Sabbath so much where even when they were told every 7 years they were to let the land lie dormant and rest, and on the sixth year God would give them double harvest to take care of them during the seventh year that the land was to rest, they violated that and kept on growing. Kept growing. Greed. Money. Money. Greed. Fill those silos. Fill my barns. Until finally God kept a tabulation. And the 70 years of captivity was God of the people paying back to God the number of Sabbaths they violated. And here's your verse proof. To fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, and those of you taking notes, that would be Jeremiah chapter 25. Until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths, for as long as she lay desolate, as long as they were out of the land, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. So when it comes to 70 years, you might ask, well, did God just simply take a dart and throw it on the wall and it hit 70? No, there's a rhyme and reason to God's judgment and even his justice. 70 years, okay, of captivity, so that the land would rest and get all that rest that was exploited by the people out of their greed for money and for wealth and for sustenance beyond measure. The land was going to rest for 70 years. That was part of the 70-year captivity. Well, notice the same thing, the synoptic version of this, or reference. Turn to 2 Kings 23. This is the account, the same account, but in 2 Kings. When you read 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, it's almost like the four Gospels in the sense there's similar historical events are mentioned, the same event, but you're going to find more detail or less detail depending upon which one of those books you're reading. Well, let's read the same account in Chronicles as it's found in 2 Kings 23. Look at verse 19. All the houses also of the high places that were in the cities of Samaria, which the king of Israel had made to provoke the Lord to anger, Joshua took away and did to them according to all the acts that he had done in Bethel. And he slew all the priests of the high places and were there upon the altars and burnt men's bones upon them and returned to Jerusalem. And the king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover unto the Lord your God. Okay, now watch this. As it is written in the book of the covenant, okay, the Passover. Surely there was not holden such a Passover from the days of the judges that judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor the kings of Judah, but in the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein the Passover was holden to the Lord in Jerusalem. Moreover, the workers with familiar spirits, the wizards, and the images, and the idols, and all the abominations that were spied in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem, did Josiah put away that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. At this time, beloved, they ended up finding a copy of the Old Testament in a wastebasket in the temple. And it was retrieved, and it was reread, and it sparked this king to do what he's doing now. And like unto them was no king before him that turned to the Lord with all of his heart, with all of his soul, with all of his might, according to the law of Moses, neither after him rose there any like him. But beloved, look at verse 22. Surely there was not holded, they have not held such a Passover as Josiah is now putting on from the days of the judges that judged Israel. You're talking hundreds of years in the past. Nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. So, beloved, you're talking about the book of Judges, the book of Ruth, 1st, 2nd Samuel, and then you got to pour yourself into 1st Chronicles, 2nd Chronicles, 1st Kings, and 2nd Kings. You're talking hundreds of years. If they held the Passover, they just went through the motions. They just went through the external formalities. Josiah here, when he hears the word of God read in his hearing, a copy of the law of Moses found in a wastebasket in the temple because of misuse and it was forgotten, Beloved, it put fire in this man's bosom. It put fire in his bones. It put marrow in his bones. And he put on a Passover that had not been seen since the time of the judges and into the kings. Beloved, this would include not only the patterns that are outlined in both the tabernacle and the temple, all the service that was accomplished in both, but it also included the rich symbolism. All these feasts, going back now to Deuteronomy 16, so you see where these feasts played a very important role in the nation, in the very life of the nation. And yes, if you look at all of these feasts, they were tied to the land. Yes, they were. These were agricultural feasts. They had everything to do with the land. The spring harvest, on or about shortly during and after the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that was the first, the initial harvest. And then you had the long summer. And during the long summer, there were no feasts. The only feast that actually began in the early part of summer would have been the Feast of Pentecost. And that was another harvest time. And then at the end of the long summer, there was no feasting. You come to the end of summer and the beginning of fall, and you had three rapid feast days. You had the New Year, Rosh Hashanah, with the blowing of the ram's horn one day. Several days later, you had the Day of Atonement, of solemn contrition, of confessing sin, and the high priest sprinkling blood on the mercy seat, the only day out of the whole year the high priest was allowed to go beyond that curtain. No one else. All the rest of the year. Not even the dust. And then you had the Feast of Tabernacles. Three rapid feasts, all in 1 month period. And that was the end of the year, the end of the growing season. Now, these feasts were rich in symbolism. Not only were they actually done by the people and were to be done by God's command, all of these feasts pictured symbolically and typology the ministry and the person of the Lord Jesus Christ. This would include not only the patterns that are outlined once again in the tabernacle, the furniture, even the floor plan forming a cross, and the temple, and all the services that were accomplished, but it also included the rich symbolism pictured even in Israel's seven secular feast days. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 13 to 15. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days after thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine. Thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow that are within thy gates. 7 days thou shalt keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose. And that was going to be eventually Jerusalem. Because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase. Again, notice the land, the crops, agriculture, and in all the works of thy hands. Therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. Now, this particular feast, this one here, goes all the way back to their wilderness wanderings. When you read the other portions dealing with this particular feast, the Feast of Tabernacles, the people would break off the branches and they would build a little makeshift tent, something to get out of the heat of the day and to be sheltered from the heat and to rest during their particular journey. Okay? The Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths, as it was also known, is a fall season feast at the end of the harvest season. The Feast of the New Year, the Solemn Day of Atonement, were also observed during the same particular period, observed between the 15th and the 22nd of the month. between, again, the calendar, the way the calendars have changed versus an Old Testament calendar that was based on the cycle of the moon. And then we have our calendar with the cycle of the earth revolving around the sun. It breaks down that sometimes when you have one of our months, if you go to a Jewish calendar under the Old Testament, actually you have the latter half of one month and the first half of the next month would correspond to one of our months. You have this almost kind of like dividing these months. And so it does cause a little bit of confusion for those of us from the Western thinking of how our calendar looks on the wall. Okay? Turn with me now to Numbers 29, and let's look at this holiday, this feast day, in more detail. You may want to cross-reference Deuteronomy 16 with this particular portion. Look at Numbers chapter 29. Let's pick up with verse 7. And ye shall have on the 10th day of this 7th month a holy convocation, and ye shall afflict your souls. Ye shall not do any work therein, but ye shall offer a burnt offering unto the Lord for a sweet savour, one young bullock, one ram, 7 lambs of the first year, and they shall be unto you without blemish. And their meat offering shall be of 4 flour mingled with oil, 3 tenth deals to a bullock, and 2 tenth deals to one ram, a several tenth deal for one lamb throughout the 7 lambs, 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering, besides the sin offering of atonement, and the continual burnt offering, and the meat offering of it, and the drink offering. Now, you know what I just got done reading? That's the Day of Atonement. On that one day. The 10th day. All right? Starting now in verses 12, all the way to verse 40, you have a minute-by-minute, moment-by-moment breakdown of every day during the feast day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Notice how it begins, verse 12. On the 15th day of the 7th month. Now go to verse 1. And the 7th month, on the first day of the month, ye shall have a holy convocation, and ye shall do no servile work, blowing the trumpets. That was New Year. Okay? That's your New Year. The 10th day of that month, verse 7, was the Day of Atonement. All right? And then, verse 12, the 15th day, all the way to the 22nd day of the month, would be the Feast of Tabernacles. So, verse 29, you need to bump that up against Deuteronomy 16 and vice versa as a good cross-reference if you're going to teach this or explain this or it comes up in a Q&A session. Okay? So, Numbers 29 is this detail. Now notice, look at verse 17. On the second day ye shall offer 12 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without spot. So verse 12 delineates what you are to do on the first day of those 7-day feasts. Verse 17 is the second day. Look at verse 20. On the third day. Verse 23. On the fourth day. Look at verse 26. On the fifth day. Look at verse 29. On the sixth day. Look at verse 32. On the seventh day. Then notice what you're not told in Deuteronomy 16, but you are given further light here. Look at verse 35. On the eighth day, ye shall have a solemn assembly. Ye shall do no servile work wherein or therein. So notice, the first day and the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles It was a high Sabbath. A high Sabbath. But ye shall offer a burnt offering, a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savour unto the Lord, one bullock, one ram, seven lambs of the first year without blemish, their meat offering, their drink offering for a bullock, for the ram and for the lambs, shall be according to your number after the manner, one goat for a sin offering, besides the continual burnt offering, and the meat offering, and the drink offering. These things ye shall do unto the Lord in your set feast, besides your vows, your freewill offering, your burnt offering, your meat offering, your drink offering, your peace offering. And Moses told the children of Israel according to all that the Lord commanded him, or commanded Moses. There it is. Wow. So verse 29 deals with 1 month at the end of the year, in the beginning of a new year, if you will, three major feasts. The new year, Day of Atonement, and then actually 8 days on for the Feast of Tabernacles. The first and the eighth day being High Sabbaths, where everyone gathered. No work was to be done, which meant the day before would have been preparation day to the max. So that's the first thing I want to show you. Now turn to John chapter 7. John's Gospel, chapter 7. And let's see if you can identify the feast. John chapter 7. Look at verses 1 and following. John chapter 7. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. That doesn't mean that it took 1,000 years for this feast to pop up on the calendar. You get a pretty good idea what the term was at hand means, meaning it was just about around the corner. His brethren therefore said unto him, Depart thence, and go into Judea, that thy disciples may see the works that thou doest. These were his half-brothers, chiding him and mocking him. Okay? If you are the Messiah, go to Jerusalem and prove it. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. So those words that came out of James and Jude, who would eventually write 2 letters of your New Testament, at this point, before the Passion, before the Resurrection, they chided their brother. They thought he was a loon, that he was out of his wits. Then Jesus said unto them, My time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hated me, because I testify of it, that the works thereof are evil. Go ye up into this feast. I go not up yet unto this feast, for my time is not yet full come. And when he had said these words unto them, he abode still in Galilee. And then in verse 10, but when his brethren were gone up, when his half-brothers themselves, now why are they going up? Because Moses commanded all the males at a certain age were to be in Jerusalem during 3 major feasts, one of which was what? Feast of Tabernacles. Then went he also up to the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Now, we don't have the time, but if you read very carefully the words of Jesus in this chapter 7, he says certain things that actually correspond to the feast that they were observing. Let me show you one of them. Verse 37. In the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. One of the things that slowly developed in the life of the nation in the Old Testament time and began to go down successive generations was during this feast, the liberal drinking of water, purified water. Isn't it amazing that during this feast, commemorating what their ancestors did centuries earlier in the wilderness, and when you're in the wilderness, what are you going to need? You're going to need water. How many times did their ancestors cry to Moses, "You brought us out here to die. No food, no water." And during this feast, the Jews had ample supplies of water, reenacting that sojourn in the desert. And here's Jesus standing in the midst, clay vessels filled with water, and he says, "If any man thirst, here am I. Come unto me and drink." Isn't that amazing? How even during the Feast of Tabernacles, known for having ample supply of not only water but wine, because it was a time of feasting, he says, "Come unto me if you're thirsty, and I'll satisfy your thirst." I find that amazing, that in the midst of this particular feast, he makes a connection between the water that was made available and him being the source of that water himself. And then finally and quickly, Nehemiah chapter 8. Nehemiah chapter 8. When this great renewal and this revival breaks out with Nehemiah and Ezra reading the scriptures, look at verse 13. "And on the second day were gathered together the chief of the fathers of all the people, the priests, the Levites, and Ezra the scribe, even to understand the words of the law. And they found written in the law which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths in the feast of the seventh month, and that they should publish and proclaim in all their cities and in Jerusalem, saying, 'Go forth unto the mount, fetch olive branches and pine branches and myrtle branches and palm branches and branches of thick trees to make booths, as it is written.' So the people went forth and brought them and made themselves booths, every one upon the top of on the roof of his house." So this was done on top of the home because their roofs were flat. They weren't like ours on an angle. "In their courts and in the courts of the house of God." So these things were all over the place. "In the street of the water gate and in the street of the gate of Ephraim, and all the congregation of them that were come again out of captivity made booths and sat under the booths." Now remember what we read about Josiah and the Passover and how many centuries they didn't do it? Watch this. "For since the days of Joshua, the son of Nun, unto that day had not the children of Israel done so." Here's another feast day that somehow they forgot on the calendar from the time of Joshua. Beloved, you do the math. You're now talking about Joshua all the way down to Nehemiah in your Old Testament text. How many decades and centuries was that? "And there was very great gladness. And also day by day, from the first day unto the last, he read in the book of the law of God." So during this renewal and the recapturing of this day and this week on their calendar, they read the Bible all 7 days. And they kept the feast 7 days. And notice, "And on the eighth day," like we read in Numbers, "was a solemn assembly, a high Sabbath, according unto the manner." Wow. How is it possible for a people to forget feast days on a calendar? If they were that forgetful, and if they were that non-observant when it came to the moral law of God, what do you think they also forgot? We're talking about a feast day. It's like you and I forgetting to observe the 4th of July, or to forget Mother's Day, or to forget your spouse or your mom and dad's birthday. Oh well, we'll catch it next year. I've given you two portions of God's Word where they blew it on the Passover and they've blown it on the Feast of Tabernacles, and it gives you the time factor of how long they laid that requirement aside. Beloved, may we not be that absent-minded, it would seem, on purpose, with God's word. Amen.